Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with a couple of articles from AARP, the magazine, under the heading of Real People. This first one is entitled, Life is a Kick, Once a Rockette. Dancer Lillian Cohen gained wisdom from the time on the kick line. Being an older dancer can be challenging. A lot of people age out by the time they're 30. When I walked into the audition for In the Heights in 2018, I made a beeline for the choreographer, convinced I was in the wrong room. The studio was filled with young dancers. I had thought the choreographer was going to give the more seasoned dancer a break, but that was not the case. I had to do the same dance that all of the 20-year-olds did. But I went through with the audition and became the oldest dancer in the movie. I've always done things on my own schedule. I started working in show business straight out of high school as a singer, dancer, and choreographer. Then, at 29, I beat out hundreds of other people for a spot in the Radio City Music Hall Rockettes. I danced with that group with all its synchronized choreography until my mid-40s. At 46, I had my daughter and started doing wardrobe. These days, I mainly teach dancing, but I'll always be proud to have been the very first Latina Rockette. The Rockettes are unique in their need for precision. If one person messes up, it messes up the whole line. The experience taught me a lot about working together. It's a lesson I try to impart to my students, on and off the stage. Our lives are deeply intertwined, and we all fare better when we support and care for one another. And this article was as told to Julie Goldenberg. Lillian Cohen, 70, is a New York City dance teacher and the author of the memoir Lily, the First Latina Rockette. Next, Mountain Pioneer. The dean of the freestyle skiers, Wayne Wong, helped create a new Olympic sport, and more than 50 years later, he's still refining it. Part of being an innovator is showing up at the right time. When I first started skiing, downhill racers were part of the ski industry. Then, suddenly, in the 1960s, all these radical, rebellious, unorthodox guys started doing what came to be called freestyle, catching air by skiing the moguls or doing big aerial jumps. You didn't have to be an elite alpine skier to do some of these tricks. It was a new way to express yourself on the snow, and I was all in. I started inventing my own moves and showing them off. At the first National Championships of Exhibition Skiing in New Hampshire in 1971, I took third place. The following year, I took first and was named Freestyle Skier of the Year by Skiing Magazine. It's a legacy that I'm still working to live up to. Maybe I can't do it like I did when I was 20, but I feel like I'm still skiing like I did when I was 40. I'm very fortunate that way. And I work on my fitness. That's a big part of it. Freestyle skiing is creative, interpretive. We experiment with dance and gymnastic-like movements. It's a lot more than just getting from point A at the top of the mountain to point B at the bottom. Being inducted into the U.S. and Canadian Ski Halls of Fame was an amazing honor. But to me, the coolest thing, which just blows my mind, is that I got hired by Deer Valley in Park City, Utah, to become their newest sponsored athlete at 74. Who gets a gig like that? I act as sort of a goodwill ambassador on the slopes. I help people have fun. A large part of skiing is the companionship, the friendships you make, sharing stories as you're riding the lifts. You have a captive audience to share laughter, to share fun times. But it's not all social. Every time I get out on the hill, I challenge myself I try to do things a little better than I did the day before. I want to be a better technical skier, a more efficient skier, and pass that on to my peers. Even as you get older, you can always improve. That's the mystique of skiing. I would encourage people, when they're on the hill, to look for that little spark of inspiration, that impetus to try something new. Experience the mountain. Experience the snow. Experience the terrain, because skiing is all about feelings. Salt Lake City was chosen as the site of the 2034 Winter Olympics, and Deer Valley will be the venue for the freestyle events. My goal now is to stay active and be part of this whole movement, at least through then. And this was as told to Brian O'Connor. Wayne Wong, 75, one of Ski Magazine's top 100 skiers of all times, lives near Reno, Nevada. And for the last one in this section, to the lighthouse. Life is just above sea level. Richard Neal snagged a real estate bargain and turned it into a calling. As a boy, I would see these ads in the back of magazines saying you could buy a government surplus Jeep for a tiny fraction of its original price. That fascinated me. Well, in 2010, I noticed a decommissioned Coast Guard light station 32 miles off the coast of North Carolina being auctioned off. I put in a bid and won the facility, called Frying Pan Tower, for $85,000. My wife and I keep a home on shore, but I come out to the lighthouse often, either by boat or by helicopter. People say, "You know, this isn't normal, right?" I say, "It's just my particular version of normal." I bought the place a month after I turned 50. I was a computer salesman, but I had done it all by then. Banking, insurance. I had been a chemist, a mechanic, plumber, electrician. There was something different about having my own 135-foot tower. Growing up in Oklahoma, everything had been flat, so Mom built me a treehouse to stare at the stars. When I finally got out to the frying pan, I realized I had bought a grown-up version of my childhood fort. The main level is a furnished 5,000-square-foot living space with a fully equipped kitchen and 8 bedrooms. We get power from solar panels, though there are also backup generators. It's certainly never boring out here. In 2014, I rode out Hurricane Arthur with 3 of our 4 children here. At times, I've stayed for 6 months straight. In 2018, I created a foundation and divested all ownership in the property. Now we operate as a nonprofit, where ecotourists come out to enjoy the scenery and isolation, and skilled volunteers contribute labor to the ongoing process of restoring the lighthouse. The goal is to protect mariners and sea life and preserve the tower for the next generation. We weld and paint and scrape, but it's not all work. Sometimes we'll scuba dive with tiger sharks or tee off into the water with golf balls made of fish food. We can shoot off fireworks that no American city would allow, since we're beyond U.S. jurisdiction. When you work a regular job, you think about the hours and the days. But out on the tower, you think in seasons. Not just seasons of the year, but seasons of your life. Gazing up at the Milky Way or down at the bioluminescent shrimp, it gives you perspective on everything. If there's something you haven't done in life, why wait? You're not going to do it afterward, and there is no retirement to life. And this was as told to David Hockman. Richard Neal, 64, a former salesman and appliance installer, is the executive director of the Frying Pan Tower Foundation. He splits his time between Wilmington, North Carolina, and a lighthouse offshore. Now, last time I started on a new magazine called Psychology Now, Take Control of Your Mind for a Happier, Healthier Life, Breaking Free from the Past. This section is on how to thrive on failure. So snub the socials. It used to be said that today's news is tomorrow's chip paper. But in the digital age, it's far harder to escape from pain, says Marianne. There's nothing like a feed full of vacation snaps and healthy meals to make us feel inadequate. And if you don't receive enough likes or comments on a particular life update, social media may even serve to downgrade what you subjectively experienced as a success, turning it into a failure. Do it. If you find you're struggling to bounce back after a particularly disappointing or life-challenging failure, try a digital detox. In a crisis, a friend's smile is likely to be far more reassuring than any grinning emoji. And lower the bar. This is the next section. It's simple. If you set unrealistic goals, you'll feel a sense of failure more often. Super slim stars with smooth, glowing skin that wear couture dresses 24/7 only exist in the movies. And this is real life. Consider your own journey and ask yourself, have I really failed here? Do it. Concentrate on taking small, tangible steps to improve an area of your life. In your career, this might mean developing a new skill rather than overstretching for a promotion straight away. You might find the smaller goals lead to the bigger ones, and there will be more wins to celebrate along the way. Stay inspired. Many investors won't consider parting with a penny unless an entrepreneur has at least one flop of a business to his or her name. And what kind of a lawyer only ever wins cases? Instead of being terrified of failure, turn your gaze to successful people and realize that it's often a necessary step on the road to success. Many of these greatest lessons we learn will come from times when things haven't run smoothly. And those struggles mean that success will feel all the sweeter when it does come. Do it. If you feel you've failed, don't keep it to yourself. You'll be empowered when people, especially those whom you perceive to be successful, respond by sharing similar experiences of their own. Now, here's a little sidebar quiz for us. Do you welcome or run from failure? If you respond to failure by getting upset and giving up, you're missing out on vital life lessons and motivating forces. Respond to failure more positively, and you may well get further in life. Your idea for a work party was vetoed. Do you get embarrassed and wish you had not said anything? Answer yes or no. There's a mistake in a craft gift you've made for a friend. Do you decide that it's better to give him or her nothing than to publicize your artistic failings? Yes or no. You've submitted a piece of work that you feel isn't your best. Do you wallow in disappointment and despair even before you've received feedback? Yes or no. You're losing badly at a game of Monopoly. Do you try to disrupt and derail the entire game? Yes or no. And finally, a colleague gets a promotion you've worked really hard for all year. Have you avoided telling anyone you applied in the first place, so no one knows you failed and you commiserate alone? Yes or no. How did you score? If you answered yes more times than no, take note. Now I'm going to move on to AARP, the bulletin, and an article under Your Health, A Lump in the Throat. As we age, choking becomes more of a hazard. One survivor shares her harrowing tale and how you can help save a life. This is by Pamela Marin. Helen and I had been friends for 50 years and seldom let more than a week pass without a long, chatty phone call or, later, frequent bursts of texts. Now, here we were on a mild summer night, sliding into a restaurant booth in Chicago after a Cubs game. We ordered drinks and appetizers and got to the business at hand. Loose talk and belly laughs. As Helen dipped into a spicy cauliflower dish, I focused on a lovely plate of thinly sliced calamari. I must have been laughing or talking when a slippery piece of food shot to the back of my mouth. I didn't panic, but I froze. Somehow, instantly, I knew I couldn't get air by nose or mouth. I was staring at the table, bizarrely running a mental checklist, as if I could think my way to a solution, when Helen's voice pierced the restaurant din. "Are you okay?" I looked up, sensing that I couldn't speak. I didn't try. I just shook my head no. Then we were both on our feet. Helen bolted around the table, shouting, "This is happening!" She stepped behind me, put a fist just above my belly button and below my ribs, wrapping her other hand around the fist, and began yanking up and in, as if she were trying to uproot a tree. The calamari slid out of my throat and into my waiting hand. More than 5,500 people died of choking in 2022, the most recent year on record. Choking is the third leading cause of what the National Safety Council calls unintentional injury death. The majority of choking fatalities occur among older adults, and while there are no exact statistics on how many of those fatalities are caused by food, it's worth taking a moment to ponder what might be going wrong. Swallowing may seem easy and automatic, but in reality, it's a complicated process of moving food from the mouth all the way into the esophagus, says Shumandar, M.D., assistant professor of laryngologist at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. Putting aside those with medical conditions such as a stroke or past surgery that might affect the head and neck, our ability to coordinate the process can begin to deteriorate as we reach our seventh decade, he says. A glance in a mirror reveals the steady advance of gray hair, wrinkles, and sunspots, the visible signs of aging. But what's going on below the surface? The late Nora Ephron titled one of her books, "I Feel Bad About My Neck." In the days after Helen's cafe heroics, I felt curious about mine. As we age, many aspects of swallowing can deteriorate. Our saliva becomes drier, our teeth decay, and the muscles of chewing and swallowing get weaker, Darn notes. Once we transport chewed food from the mouth to the back of the throat, swallowing's starting line, it passes through a series of muscles and valves whose function may have weakened, leading to food getting stuck in the throat and causing choking, explains Darr. The whole process slows as we age, so in addition to the degradation of all of the body parts involved in swallowing, we increasingly need longer to accomplish the task. If you're older than 50, you were around in 1974, when an obscure journal, Emergency Medicine, published an article by an equally obscure thoracic surgeon in Pop Goes the Cafe Coronary. Henry Heimlich, M.D., described his work developing a way to help people choking on food. At the time, the American Red Cross, the American Heart Association, and other groups recommended back slaps to counteract choking. As head of surgery at Cincinnati's Jewish Hospital and one of the first surgeons to perform an operation that fixed damaged esophagi, Heimlich believed that back slaps only served to drive a lodged object deeper into the throat. He envisioned a better method, formed a research team, and tested his theory on dogs. He inserted a tube with a balloon at the end into an anesthetized dog's airway and then inflated the balloon. When the dog began to choke, pressure was applied just below the ribs, causing the lungs to act like bellows, as Heimlich had theorized, and expel the obstruction. The Chicago Daily News reported on Heimlich's article, and the doctor's advice quickly spread. 5 years after he published his research, Heimlich himself, Heimlich Johnny Carson, on The Tonight Show. Another 6 years passed before the Surgeon General and various medical associations embraced the life-saving Heimlich maneuver, also known as abdominal thrusts, as illustrated with diagrams posted in countless restaurants around the country to this day. This past September, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu used the technique to help save the life of a contestant at a local lobster roll-eating contest. A few days after I got home from my visit to Chicago, I attended a choke safety class that offered basic training to local police, teachers, and restaurant employees. Though I had stayed calm back in the restaurant with an airway blocked by culinary, something about revisiting the event brought up intense emotions, fear mostly, and the feeling of helplessness. The instructor, Michelle, screened a short training video. Then it was time to put theory into practice. Michelle stepped behind a staffer named Monica, who wore a heavily padded vest. Michelle wrapped her arms around Monica, just as Helen had embraced me, and gave a sharp upward thrust with her forearms. A bright yellow, thumb-sized projectile flew from Monica's vest, indicating success. Special effects. Fun. They demonstrated the technique again, Michelle noting the 45-degree angle of the Heimlich motion. When it was my turn, I needed a few tries to dislodge the foam food, but oh, what a satisfying moment it was. I practiced a few more times, accepted a certificate, and left the training session feeling relieved. A burden I didn't know I was carrying was gone now, and even better, I would know what to do if I was on the other side of the table next time. So we do have some instructions here, and I think they're pretty good even without being able to actually see these pictures. Be a lifesaver. How to perform abdominal thrusts. The universal sign for I'm choking is both hands placed loosely around the neck, says Elizabeth Lipton Daly, executive director of the National Foundation of Swallowing Disorders. She cautions that when performing the Heimlich maneuver on a person of advanced age, be gentle but firm. Depending on the amount of pressure you apply, too much force might cause injury, like cracking the choking person's ribs. Here's a guide on how to perform abdominal thrusts. 1. You stand behind the choking person. Press your fist with your thumb facing in, into the person's abdomen, just above the belly button. Then wrap your other hand around your fist and hold on tight. Quickly thrust upward and inward into the person's belly. Repeat several times until the object that's causing the choking comes loose. If the object cannot be dislodged or if the person loses consciousness, call 911. And to learn more about how to save the life of someone who's choking, the American Heart Association offers a range of CPR courses with information on abdominal thrusts and hands-on training at heart.org. The American Red Cross includes skills to use in choking emergencies as part of its online Until Help Arrives CPR training course for $40 and in-person CPR training at redcross.org. Now, another little bit of cautionary information. The CDC urges pneumonia vaccines starting at age 50. Government health officials now recommend that anyone 50 or older get a shot or protect them from pneumonia, from pneumococcal disease, a serious bacterial infection that can lead to pneumonia, meningitis, and other ailments. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention changed its advice on the vaccine in late October. Until then, only people 65 plus were urged to get the vaccine. William Schaffner, a professor of preventive medicine and infectious diseases at Vanderbilt University, points out that roughly 30 to 50% of adults ages 50 to 64 have an underlying condition that puts them at higher risk for pneumococcal disease. So we would like to vaccinate a large proportion of that population, Schaffner says. Studies showed the pneumococcal vaccine can help lower your chances of contracting the disease or reduce its severity if you do get it, possibly saving your life. Also C is bronchitis or pneumonia. It's in this magazine, which we will discuss next week. Pneumococcal disease is an umbrella term for infections caused by Streptococcus pneumoniae, spread through the air by coughing or sneezing. An estimated 150,000 Americans are hospitalized with pneumococcal pneumonia each year, and about 1 in 20 of those will die. In the little bit of time we have left, we'll go back to the magazine and look at the big 5-0, Bradley Cooper. His birthday was January 5th. Whether he's playing a musician, chef, or Navy SEAL, this actor and filmmaker is known for fully inhabiting his roles. His earlier years, Cooper grew up near Philadelphia and, like his character in Silver Lining Playbook, is a fan of the Eagles. Elephant fan as a kid, Cooper saw the film The Elephant Man and was inspired to act. In 2014, he starred in a Broadway version. Method Man. Cooper has acquired specific skills for his on-screen roles, including playing guitar and piano, A Star is Born, cooking, Burnt, and marksmanship, American Sniper. Quotable. Your voice is everything as an actor, Cooper told the New York Times in 2018. It's like plugging in the electrical cord to truth. And his films have grossed $13 billion. Now let's see, Chris Evert's birthday was December 21st. The tennis legend recently shared that she thought she had fought ovarian cancer twice. She was 70. Denzel Washington, December 28th. The acclaimed actor is set to star in Shakespeare's Othello on Broadway, and he is turned 70. Gail King, December 28th. The CBS Morning co-host welcomed a second grandchild to her family in 2024, and she is 70. Rod Stewart, January 10th, the singer collaborated with Jules Holland on an album of big band songs, Swing Fever, and he turned 80. And Tom Selleck, January 29th, the Blue Bloods and Mangum P.I. star, released a memoir in 2024 titled You Never Know, and he is 80. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.